On the sidelines of the summit, President Bush met the Prime Minister of India. They stood before the press. They made general, news-free, but cordial, pleasant statements. Behind the scenes, something dramatic was happening. India appears to be moving ahead on a nuclear deal negotiated some time ago with the United States. Prime Minister Manmohan Singh favored that deal, but some minority parts of his government were so opposed that they threatened to bring down his government. The whole thing was stalled. Already, now that it's moving forward, the communists who supported Singh withdrew from the government. They say the deal will make India subservient to Washington. We brought in Ashley Tellis, who worked on the nuclear deal for the State Department until 2007, and we asked why India is finally moving forward.
I think there were two things that account for the change. The first is the Prime Minister's persistence. He never quite gave up. And even though people were rushing to declare the death of the deal, he was working frantically behind the scenes, trying to cobble the political decision to move forward.
Let's remember, this is a prime minister who, from the Americans' perspective, was offered a great deal. Go ahead, keep your nuclear weapons, and we'll help you with civilian nuclear technology. We'll pretty much give you everything you asked for. And yet he was having trouble selling it politically inside his own country.
Yes, and I think the reason for that is, in some sense, the very success of the project. The deal indicated closing a rapprochement between the United States and India. And I think that was what threatened the communist members of his coalition the most.
They didn't like the idea of India being too friendly with the U.S.
That's exactly right.
Is it possible that having taken this great risk, India's government will end up getting nothing because this nuclear deal still has to be approved by international regulatory agencies and it could fail at some point?
I think that is a possibility, but I think it's a remote one. Because the international community, at least since the announcement of the deal, has come around to the idea that we have to complete this in some shape or form. Part of it is simply because each of the important countries in this business, in the nuclear suppliers group.
The nuclear suppliers group, those are the people who have weapons or nuclear technology now, who
have had
a monopoly up to now, who would actually be selling stuff to
that
India,
is correct.
By the way.
And each of the partners in that group values its bilateral relations with India, and so is unlikely to actually, you know, draw such lines in the sand that actually managed to kill the deal.
Let me ask about one of the gravest criticisms leveled against this deal from the United States. And I'll ask you, as a former full-time member of the Bush administration who still consults for the State Department, you make this nuclear deal with India. You tell them, keep your nuclear weapons and we'll work with you on civilian nuclear power. Once you've made that deal, what possible argument is there left to argue against Iran doing whatever it wants to do with nuclear weapons or nuclear power or anything else? What argument is left?
There is a major difference between the Indian case and the Iranian case.
They
haven't signed the non-proliferation treaty. Mm-hmm. And so are free, if they choose to, develop a nuclear arsenal if they want to. The Iranians, on the other hand, by signing the nuclear non-proliferation treaty, solemnly abjured their right to acquire nuclear weapons, while covertly doing exactly just that. Whereas the Indian case is truly an anomaly, because you have a country here that never made a commitment not to acquire nuclear weapons, has acquired nuclear weapons, and therefore in some sense is outside the tent. And so the challenge for the administration is what kind of a deal could be constructed to bring India into this regime. And I think the price for bringing India into the regime was allowing it to maintain its nuclear weapons, because no other deal was possible.
Having made this deal with India, can you envision a time not so far in the future when India is a reliable day-to-day ally of the United States, the way that Britain is, say, or Germany even?
I think it would be hard to imagine that in a straightforward sense, because the Indians have always had a tradition of fiercely guarding their own independence. And I think they will remain non-aligned in the classic sense, whether they have this deal or not.
What about in a looser sense? Because it's been also assumed that one reason to pursue this nuclear deal with India is to prop up India and encourage India to be a counterweight to China, which so many Americans are worried about.
I think it's more subtle than that. I think U.S. interests in Asia require a balance of power, which prevents any one country from being dominant. And in the context of this strategy, it makes perfect sense for us to work with existing democratic states like Japan, like India, to in a sense hold the line against potential Chinese dominance. But I don't think this deal gets us there. I see this as being one component in a much larger strategy of bringing the United States and India together, not simply for reasons relating to Asia, but for a whole range of global issues.
Ashley Tellis of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, thanks very much.
Pleasure to be here.